Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. So some sort of commentary in this video about the fact that life is tough. And for some people, really tough. And for some people, really, really tough. And nasty and horrible. And that basically, if you think you're living some sort of good enough existence that you'd want to do it again and again, every little bit of it, do the same learning process over and over, same work, the same drudgery, the same horrible blah blah blah, and you haven't even done the worst yet, right? You probably haven't had to wipe your mother's ass yet, you know, and you probably haven't had to watch her die. Then you haven't had to do the same thing, you know, where you go through the cling to life episode and endure all kinds of indignities as you fade into oblivion. So really, your opinion, frankly, if you're a pro-lifer, it doesn't mean much to me, because you really haven't done the big piece that's connected to life, which is die not so good. Okay, that's part of the bargain, frankly, and it's a non-starter from my perspective. I ain't buying. You know, somebody would have told me ahead of time, this is the price you're going to pay, I would have said, I'm not really interested then. Why would I buy this car? It's like buying a car that, you know, it's guaranteed that the car will someday just explode, you know, and blow your fingers off. Oh, no, I'm not buying that car. Anyway, so something like that. Commentary about this, just this basic circumstance of the fact that we exist in the universe, and yes, we're little sentient robots. We can think and talk and bullshit to make jokes and all this other little bullshit, but it doesn't add up to much at all. It's not much of a song and dance. And the price is that we torture a bunch of animals and people so we can put on this play, okay? It's not some little Rascals episode, you know, where you just bang together some cardboard and make yourself a stage. No, there's real blood, real horror, real bad stuff happening. Really expensive. It's not cheap, this production. Simple enough argument. So anyway, there's these people, group thinkers, called Antinatalist Advocacy, and they have a little infinity symbol. I don't exactly know why that's useful, but anyway, with a little heart in it. Isn't that cute? I don't know. Doesn't do much for me, frankly. They have a little blue planet here. Oh, pretty blue planet. For whatever reason, okay. Some sort of, I guess it's a global thing. Maybe that's it, I don't know. But there's no continents, really. There's just clouds and water. It doesn't look like a thing with a bunch of living things eating each other. It doesn't really give you the idea that this is the blood planet. You know, there's not like a big footprint with blood leaking out of it or something. It doesn't really say to me what the subject's really about, which is, you know, preventing harm, convincing people not to be jackasses and imposers of cruelty. Gee, you wouldn't think that would be that hard to do, you know, but apparently it is. So that's sort of disappointing. All right, so this one's just their welcoming address, I guess, right? This one's day one. Okay, so we're going to deal with a couple of these guests, speakers, you know, at their conference that have something to do with the subject, but frankly, woof, you know, not very good, not very representative of, in my opinion, nice reasoned arguments. So this David Pierce guy is a philosopher who shares a pessimistic evaluation of sentient life's predicament, except he thinks, okay, it's almost like the people who argue free will and then say, you know, they know there's no free will, but they do this compatibilist thing where we have to let people think they do have free will, so we have to lie and be bullshitters. So he's selling this idea that somehow we can improve the human condition, that somehow we're going to genetically alter human beings, okay? Like, that's not a completely insidiously dangerous subject, right? Genetically altering human beings. Oh, and they'll turn out to be all white for some reason. You know, come on. Not going to work. And that even if it were possible that somehow genes decide how well you function in your existence, like how often you get sick, you know, all these other stuff. Now, some of that's true. I mean, you can definitely have a human being who's got terrible genetics, is going to have heart disease, and going to have all kinds of stuff, all kinds of ailments, going to be very expensive to take care of. There's all kinds of genetic disorders you can be born with that we probably shouldn't let people be born with because they're going to be very expensive and very debilitating. So, yeah, those are reasonable arguments, but even the fact is we can't impose this on anybody because we don't have enough guts as a society to say you're obligated. You know, society will just suggest that maybe you shouldn't have a mongoloid child. You know, if you know he has mongoloidism, you have an abortion. But there's a lot of people who can't do that, you know, because they think they're sinning against their God, or they have some silly notion that their fetus is more in danger, more capable of suffering than what they ate for dinner. You know, the animal, fully grown, mature, brained, sentient creature they ate for dinner is somehow much less of a worry than the fetus that doesn't even have a developed brain. It somehow can do more, it can experience more horror somehow. Which is just really ignorant and stupid and really shouldn't be placated by anyone. But anyway, he's suggesting all this stuff and she's talking as if we can become pain-free, which that's leprosy, frankly. You know, that's the problem with leprosy isn't that it's a horrible, painful disease. The problem with leprosy is that you don't feel enough pain and therefore you make a mess out of yourself. You end up knocking your fingers off and scratching itches until they're infected and doing all kinds of things that are, you end up destroying yourself because you don't feel enough. You don't have enough inhibition built into the system to stop you from grinding your teeth too hard, doing all kinds of things that we have to feel negative sensations to prevent us from doing damage. So it doesn't even make sense on the face. Some idea that you could make somebody emotionally indifferent is also, I'd say, completely anti-scientific in the sense that for millions of years, you know, billions even, for hundreds of millions anyway, reward and punishment is the function of the brain. That's why we have these emotions, is to exactly inhibit behavior, to prevent us from getting out of line and all these other things, and to control our behavior. And most of those control mechanisms are frankly very positive in terms of making us more capable of not killing everyone. You know, so it just, you know, it doesn't make much sense. We need the inhibitions, we need these mechanisms. So even on that face, I'd say it's just rubbish that this transhumanism through genetic code is going anywhere at all. That's going to make anybody's life truly that much better. I mean, the fact that we could prevent some people from being born with certain disabilities makes sense. But they're not showing that they have the political clout or even the guts to propose legislating such things. You know, the simple truth is most people want to persuade people not to be assholes. They don't want to have to force them to be assholes, not to be assholes, cruel assholes. But anyway, the big thing he says that's really stupid is he pretends not to notice what's been happening over the last 100 years, which is people have in fact, civilizations have in fact completely perverted and upturned what you could call the traditional family. It's just not existent as a fact, and there's tons of people who now routinely live without getting married and without having kids. And I'm sure there's a correlation, a huge correlation probably, between atheism and the number of kids you have, and things like veganism and the number of kids you have. So there's lots of viable subjects where you could point out that this little bit of education, this change of perspective, created by usually enhanced knowledge of the world and science, does in fact, like science, you could give people science tests, and probably by the basis of how much people know about, Galileo, Descartes, and Newton, you could probably find a huge correlation between how much knowledge people have of science and its history and how many kids they have. But at any rate, the statistics are the statistics. I mean, clearly in all the countries where education is standardized, where some measure of civilization is guaranteed for a child, overwhelming, okay, in terms of the impact that education has had on birth rates, way the hell down. Countries like Japan are in negative growth, not because they're all antinatalists, not because they all became hostile to existence itself, but just because they were now given first the choice. Okay, the traditional pressures were not as great, and they had lots of things to be interested in. Photography, all kinds of things to occupy their interest, and playing the video game of raise a child, no longer were they forced or tied to that machine. They could play some other pinball machine, something far more interesting and less dangerous than raise child. That's just a game a lot of people, given the choice, will say, really, I don't want to play that. Okay, it's hard to win. Lots of bad parts. So no thank you. And they're making the choice. So it's, it seems from our position, it doesn't seem reasonable for me to say we've already won the war. But frankly, okay, as a philosophical conversation, God is dead for people that are educated. And, this conversation about life being beyond reasonable doubt, proven to be some beautiful, perfect, wonderful thing, is also in serious doubt in intelligent minds. And so in many ways, the argument has been won. And the real correlation now isn't genetics. People don't genetically have kids. People make a philosophical choice not to. All right. So this isn't, we're not just zoo animals. We're quite capable of controlling our the very few bodily impulses we have, and understanding, we can put our poo in a toilet. We can handle it. And we can make sure that our sperm doesn't go into an ovary and make a mess. Well, I guess it doesn't go to the ovary, but the fallopian tube. We can figure out how to stop these things from happening that we don't want to have happen, that are associated with the few little impulses that we have. There's no direct correlation between sexual desire and having babies. None of that stuff exists anymore. It's a hugely different world than it was 200 years ago, even, or 300 years ago, where it was really a lot harder to stop pregnancy from happening if you wanted to have any kind of sex life. It's just silly, frankly, for him to argue that this is the barrier, that somehow there's some human instinct to have kids, or that there's some human biological imperative that is too overwhelming. It's clearly not too overwhelming, because most of the educated world, if they were in control, if they were the only breeding population, antinatalists wouldn't have to argue, because all populations would be in decline. And the fact is, they would all be heading for extinction. And none of them were born to antinatalist parents, not a single one of them. So it's an absolute perfect win, in a sense. So it's just, I don't even know how he can make such a silly argument that somehow we can't overcome biology and a little bit of traditional memeology, you know, a little bit of this traditional psycho-warfare, you know, of pressure to have kids. All of that has evaporated, and people live their lives. They dye their hair any color they want, you know. they're not obedient to this crap anymore, and there's no notion of Rockwellian obligation to march in this uniform and march in this direction and all that crap. All of that is way gone, and the only thing breaking it is the ignorant poor who are making an absolute mess of every civilization they get near. You know, they're just a horrible blight on human efficiency and productivity. And if their reckless behavior could be controlled, game over, we win. So the enemy is ignorance, a lack of a high school diploma, and poverty. These are the breeders. That's where 85% of it is. 85%. You know, you could draw a big 85% of it is ignorance. That's what's having kids. Not culture, not intelligence, not science. None of that stuff is having enough kids to keep us here, to oblige us to be enslaved to this redundant horror. So anyway, so this guy is just wrong. He's not a very good spokesman because he's just inaccurate. So we'll find a little bit of it. We'll see if we can find a little bit of it. I guess I should go to the YouTube channel so I can play the video larger.
It's talkers.
Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Yeah. YouTube. Yes, watch on YouTube. Ooh, I hate to do that. Hate to hit that button. But we'll do it for the sake of, I don't know, for some purpose. I guess just so you could see the video better, right? Let's see, can you see it? Hey, it didn't. Oh, okay, yeah, I changed it. Wait a minute. It looks the same. That is funny. The video looks the same as their website. Oh, okay. They're trying to fool me. Oh, I guess I could get rid of this eyeball thing. That's probably a little distracting. All right. So, yeah, let's see if we can find some place in here. He basically says the same crap over and over. So, all right. So that's the intro. So this is the conversation with him, and they threw a bunch of crap on the screen, but none of it was authoritative in any way. So I guess we'll just try right in here.
Issues. Hopefully, those won't persist. All right. David will be talking about antinatalism and selection pressure, the case for genome reform and a bio-happiness revolution. So
selection pressure, so whatever that even means, right? So this really isn't a genetic disorder anymore. Having kids is not a genetic disorder. So it was really a willful decision, and we know that it really almost should be against the law for anybody to have kids because their genes did it, okay? I mean, they really should be required to take the driver's lesson. They should be able to get a license. They should be able to be saying, I'm overtly doing this. I know I'm putting something at risk, and I don't fucking care. They should have to sign a piece of paper where they say, yes, I know I'm risking something's welfare. He could be harmed incredibly. It might be damn humiliating for him to wipe my ass, okay, when I'm disabled. It might be a disgusting burden for him to pay my bills. All that, list that stuff, and then have them sign it saying, yes, I don't fucking care. All right, I don't care if I harm something. Let them sign that piece of paper. The cruel little bastards. That would be more effective policy, okay? If we could just make people accountable for the choice they have made, all right, instead of celebrating their fucktardery and saying, oh, how cute it is. And, oh, isn't that just charming? Oh, I'm glad it's special for you. I'm glad you like being pregnant. I'm glad you like being, natling and such. No. There should be a little bit of a scowl. How dare you, you arrogant pig. How obnoxious of you to think that kid wants you as its mother. Yeah, why do you think you're good enough? I mean, you know, you're qualified. What makes you think so? That kind of thing.
Thought so-called hard antinatalism, i.e. the idea that everyone everywhere should stop having children and we should somehow use cross-species sterilization or something.
No, yeah, so it doesn't come to any of that. That's not what the argument's about. The argument is merely about the fact that, you know, it can be made as an argument. I mean, you can explain to people why it's in their own interest not to have kids, the benefits, and then you can explain the, you know, the ethical imperative, which is you do understand that you really are just taking a gigantic risk, that life is tough, that it is hard to find a niche, it is hard to have a especially wonderful life, that most people don't have an especially wonderful life, that half the population ends up disabled before it hits 50 years old. So let's understand, this is not some kind of free party gift. This is a vial of something that looks a little more dangerous than that. You know, it's got that funny green color.
Something like that to prevent the suffering of non-human animals. I would be going down that route.
So the point is he's saying that somehow he is an extinctionist, but he doesn't think people can do that on purpose, even though they're already doing it on purpose in most of the civilized... Well, there's no real point in arguing this, right? There's no part of the civilized world that has a native population that is increasing. Their native population in all educated countries is going down, and it's only through the importation of morons that they keep increasing their domestic population. So we already know what the liability is. Ignorance breeds people, not intelligence. The more intelligence people have, the less children they have. Fact. Absolute, undeniable fact. So we should be saying is we've got to quit allowing these stupid countries, these primitive countries, to allow their populations to remain so fucking ignorant. We got to force them to become civilized, or we got to take over. We got to bribe them into it, or we got to just force them into it.
Unfortunately, any possible solution to the problem of suffering and the horrors of Darwinian malware, it's not enough for it to be technically feasible. It's also got to be sociologically realistic.
And again, the sociological evidence is we already won the argument. Half the population in civilized countries doesn't even get married, let alone think about family life.
And this is the problem with so-called hard antinatalism. Hard antinatalism is just not viable. Most people, for evolutionary reasons...
So here he's just saying it. All right, so this is the key moment, right? He's saying for evolutionary reasons. I never had any evolutionary reason. What evolutionary reason is there? There's absolutely nothing about it that's at all attractive. The fact is baboons have kids. They don't have kids because they're, you know, when they're fucking their bitches, they're not going, I'm making babies. They're not procreating on purpose. So this is so backward in the sense that he still hasn't heard that the sexual impulse is not an impulse to have kids. It's an impulse to stick your dick in a vagina. That's what the impulse is. And it doesn't go any further than that. No male is going to tell me that, you know, when he's doing it, he's thinking about, I'm making a fetus named Jimmy. Come on. Bullshit.
Absolutely determined to have children. And no amount of
Just amazing bullshit. So this is all, I mean, again, these are all statistically already proven facts. I mean, in India, if you get a girl to her 18th birthday without her having a pregnancy, she will in fact have the two kid thing or less. And if she has a kid before her 18th birthday, then the average is 5. I mean, you know, that's real. That's what really happens, okay? You have to rescue people from the mistake of being tied to baby rearing, all right? And give them a real job instead of that stupid one, that default one. And in many cases, you know, these women don't even have a choice. You know, they're just knocked up at 13 and they're just forced to become somebody's property and somebody's, you know, build my legacy for me. I don't want to have anything to do with it. And a lot of those kids just end up committing suicide. So, yeah, that doesn't work all too well either. The disinterested father who just makes babies for some sort of, so he can put the trophy on his wall.
Reasoned argument that antinatalists use is going to change what most people think.
So again, we already know, again, why do I have to even make this argument? Most people have some respect for the dangers of making babies. Most people have some kind of fear impulse, okay, some sort of apprehension, some sort of notion that this isn't something you do when you have, you know, 10 cents in your pocket. This isn't something you do when you want to go out drinking with the fellas. This isn't something you do when you have a whole bunch of hobbies that are really expensive because you know none of those things are going to happen if you have kids. I mean, you're going to have to sell your, you know, your fancy car. They already can do this math.
Involuntary childlessness. I mean, millions of people worldwide are involuntarily child-free. Causes immense suffering.
So this is more nonsense, right? This is a tiny percentage of the population doing all this whining and crying because their ovary is broken and they can't make a baby. So it's a tiny number of people that are doing all of that angsting, you know, over the fact that they just can't, no matter what they do, they can't make a baby. This isn't 90%. This isn't 10% of the human population. This isn't a crisis anywhere, but in a tiny percentage of people who are so delusional and fat-headed that they think the only thing, their only job here on Earth is to sit there and clean, you know, wipe little duty behinds. They're like rubbing little kids' behinds.
Yeah. People go to quite extraordinary lengths to reproduce. I mean, now
tiny percentage of the humans on Earth.
With in vitro fertilization techniques, you get 70-year-old.
Yeah, a tiny percentage. How many 17-year-olds are fathering children? I mean, get real. 1 in 1,000? As a practical fact, what's the number? How many 70-year-olds are having kids? You know, come on. Tiny minute percentage. So just bullshit arguments, really. Just, come on, rubbish. All right, so the guy doesn't really have anything else to say, frankly. So, again, he's just, you know, he personally finds life scary and upsetting and unnerving and distressing, and for whatever retarded reason, he's ignoring the fact that we're already winning the argument, and he wants to throw the whole thing away to try to sell some sort of Nazi-esque eugenics program on the human race, which is just seems, you want to talk about, that's just a giant waste of goddamn time. You want to try to convince the people of Earth that you have the special Aryan code, you know, the special good code, human, this is the ideal human, the mega man, I'm going to make my mega human. I mean, this Nietzschean barf, you know, you want to sell that crap? Good luck. Too silly. I mean, we're just too silly. All right, I guess we'll move on to the second guy, which was the Mahdi Hari guy. Okay, so I gotta find that. Oh no, this was some other asshole was in between. Yeah, so he's a vegan, okay, but I don't know, you know, he's not really an anti-natalist, so what's the point? I mean, so I don't know what his agenda is. I guess we could listen to a little of it. We'll see if he has some sort of agenda here. Something. But yeah, I don't see the point. Why bother being vegan if you don't understand that? I mean, to not understand that the attrition that happens in nature is no kinder than the worst slaughterhouse in America doesn't have anything, on in terms of cruelty on what life will do to every single organism in nature. They all die badly. I mean, okay, some of them are really lucky in that maybe they have a aneurysm explode and they're just dropped dead instantly. But most of them really do get dragged into the dirt hard. They get the shit kicked out of them before they're dead. They don't get a little blow to the brain and they're gone in a couple of minutes or a couple of seconds. They don't get anything like that. Okay, they're slowly ripped to pieces, piece by piece. Starved to death. All of that. Just dismal. I saw a nature video where a lion's tail fell off. His tail fell off. I mean, the indignity went that low. I mean, just brutal. Just too disgusting to ever have happened again and again and again and again. And that has to be explained to these douches? Fuck.
The philosophies.
That's a good question. When it comes to my advocacy, I'm very careful of when I bring which topic, right?
Okay, so this whole thing is really, look, it's just fine. Somebody wants to say, I don't rape women. And that's as far as it goes, though. I just personally choose not to rape them because, frankly, I don't think it's much fun. Okay, I mean, I don't want to have to beat them, and I'm really not interested in doing anything violent and offensive, to get off. So I don't rape women, but I don't care if you do it. It's not my business. None of my business. So you go ahead. I wouldn't call you anti-rape then. Okay, you're just saying I don't personally get off raping, but you're not saying anything about the idea of rape, okay, and what you're stealing from the other person and all of that, understanding in any conceptual way what you're risking and taking from somebody else by imposing. And that certainly isn't the same subject. You can't really say you're anti, anything. So if this guy, he's just saying, I think animals are cute and I want to save the ones in factory farms, and that's as far as you can think, well, that's a pretty limited vision of reality.
I'm firstly an animal rights activist, and my stance on antinatalism came to me after becoming an animal rights activist. My main worry is, of course, the incredible amount of harm that we're causing onto other animals. So
again, the main worry, frankly, is the size of nature. The nature is so much bigger than anything we're doing that it's really, the scale is, you're insulting the bazillion of rodents on Earth that live these really tough, hard, little short lives, okay? Very sentient organism, very conscious, very aware, very, very alive organism. All right, we find them a little bit scurvy and disgusting, but the fact is that's where sentience is trapped. And they're in glue traps, and they're in all kinds of messes. And if, again, in nature, isn't going to treat them any nicer. They're going to be grabbed by some bird and then ripped to pieces while they're still alive. I mean, they're going to experience all kinds of horror, let alone all the diseases they're subject to. The mass slaughter, the lemming, circumstance where they their hormones go nuts and they all say, get away, move west, young man. And they try to run there. It's brutal.
By becoming an animal rights activist and a vegan, of course.
And it's, yes, that's perfect. I'm all for, you know, defending the poor animals that we're subjecting to experimentation and all this other stuff because we think we're so superior. And we're really not in terms of a capacity to be tortured. Their capacity to be tortured has never been proven to be inferior to ours. So until we prove it to be inferior, we really don't have any right.
You're taking away all of that contribution that you have already, which, you know, as antinatalists, we believe in what we believe because we understand what suffering means and we want to stop that type of suffering. So for me, it's not even a question that the first step should be to go vegan if you believe in antinatalism.
But see, that's where I guess I would disagree because it's such a minor step. The fact is it's really not going to have much of an impact as individuals. The point is to go philosophically vegan. Whether these people actually go vegan isn't their obligation. You want to spread the word. You can't make it painful and obligatory. You have to make it something that lets them say, this is how much I want to be a Catholic, or this is how much I want to be something. You have to, you know, you have to invite them without saying, well, you have to give us $50,000. So if you don't ask too much, okay, then you can get them in the door. But if you keep slamming the door and saying, if you aren't 100% this, and if you don't do exactly what we say, you're not one of us, blah, 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 is pretty stupid, frankly. Not that I'm saying anything to encourage people to be lazy in their veganism, because it isn't that hard to be a vegan. But I'm just saying you don't have to make this argument that this is the way we fix the problem, because the problem is the other people breeding. The problem isn't the guy who tends to go vegan is somebody who already tended to be afraid of having kids. We need him to instill some of his fear and apprehension about being a cruel asshole and his desire not to be a cruel asshole. And he has to convince these morons, okay, that they're cruel assholes. That's the more important thing to be, is somebody convincing other people not to be cruel assholes. In my opinion.
Why else would you want to make sure that there's not like so much suffering in the world? So I definitely think that there's a direct link between the two, but the link is more of a strong link of, if you believe in antinatalism, you have no other option. You have no justifiable way of continuing to consume animal products.
Again, so there's lots of people who think they're physically dependent, that somehow they're going to be physically unbroken and unhealthy if they don't continue to eat meat. Now, I can even argue from my own personal experience, frankly, I don't think I feel better as a vegan. Okay, I think if I think back to when I was drinking milk and eating meat, I physically felt better than I feel now. But yeah, that's just, you know, my personal experience. Maybe other people's personal experience is going to be different than that. Now, I'm not saying I don't gain the health benefits. I'm physically healthier for it, but it wasn't like eating meat made me fat or eating meat made me sluggish or, so these are all things that are part of the argument, and that to some extent you could argue that because humans have had meat as part of their diet for a couple of million years, that they have, you know, broken their biological capacity, to be comfortably vegan. I'm not saying we can't be. I'm just saying maybe it's not going to be as comfortable. I really don't want to make any excuses. I don't want to sound like I'm saying anything to say that there is some reason you need to eat meat. There really isn't. But I'm just saying there's plenty of psychological problems people have making the full transition. So why obligate it? Why not just get them to admit it's preferable that they don't torture animals for the mere convenience of a flavor enhancement. Okay, if it's just for flavor enhancement, that's bogus. Because there's lots of tasty shit that isn't made out of animal torture.
The other way around, I think, if I imagine myself to have been an antinatalist first and then come across animal rights, I think that would again be an extension of my...
This parsing of philosophical perspectives. You either are sensitive or you're not sensitive. Frankly, is there anything more complicated than that? You either can empathize and understand, or you can't. So there's people who don't think animals are conscious. They don't think they're having experiences like we're having. They don't imagine being an animal in the sense of being ignorant and afraid and trapped and, you know, having just this impulse agenda motivating them. They can't really imagine that world, so they don't really imagine how obviously unpleasant it would be to live in that state. Where you have so little assurance of anything, and you have to keep living from moment to moment, and how narrow and undignified it is to be trapped in such a state, such a retardation, trapped in such ignorance. It's really just about understanding and empathy, and is it that complicated, really, to just acknowledge the fact that you know having a nail in your eye is no fun, and you know it's not going to do a chimpanzee any good either. He's not going to have a good time either. Shouldn't even have to be said.
They have an inkling that something is wrong. Whereas when he talks to them for the first time about antinatalism, it's easier to dismiss you as a crank or a weirdo. And then sadly use that to dismiss your position on animal rights as well, which they were probably closer to getting. We've got a question here about whether or not you are categorically...
Yeah, the whole belonging to a club of weirdos is a problem. So yeah, that's sort of the stigma. But you could argue that you could find those kind of traits in lots of different fields of... You know, people like dentists, they probably have some characteristics in common. You know, not too tall, you know, certain things that they aren't. So you could probably find, you know, some way to categorize people who are, people who would make an icon with a little heart in it, you know. Yeah, I mean, they probably share some characteristics.
Opposed to moral agents breeding non-human animals? Like, is it... We talked about eating animals, like killing the animals, as being categorically wrong. Does the breeding of animals...
See, this is where it gets a little bit philosophically juvenile or infantile. Because obviously killing... it's really not that bad a thing, right? So, I mean, there's theoretically you can make almost no ground out of killing an animal. I mean, you can't really make that into a harm of some kind. If you kill it instantly, like it's asleep and it never wakes up, it's, I think, impossible to make some sort of intelligent argument that something bad happened. I mean, is there any way to do that? I mean, unless it's the mother cat and she's taking care of her kittens and her kittens will starve. And so, you know, unless you make up some peripheral story, the act itself of the animal dying is nothing. Okay, so the being dead is nothing. Let me put it that way. The process of dying is really important. And the fact is that factory farms aren't doing it well enough. But they're certainly doing it better than they used to, all right? And they're certainly doing it better than, you know, the kosher industry, you know, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, you know, the bigger deal is how you're torturing the animal before you kill it.
Is that also categorically wrong, in your opinion?
Yeah, because humans should have no right to bring into existence even another animal. Who are we to bring another animal into.
So where do these people make these distinctions? Why should nature be allowed to? So if humans aren't allowed to, why is nature allowed to? Nature doesn't have a better degree than we do. Nature didn't go to Harvard. Nature doesn't have any credibility at all. Why should nature's opinion be respected by anyone? I mean, this is the same argument that we'll get to with the Mahdi Hadi guy. But I mean, his argument is that somehow animals have an autonomy that he can't violate. You know, that some ambiguous notion of I'm not allowed to call animals retarded and do what's in their best interest. So in a sense, it's like he would create an extinction policy, and it wouldn't include retarded humans. They could stay, you know, something like that. Too silly.
The existence. The only reason why we do that is for human gains. We never do it in order to please the other animal that we're bringing into existence. You know, take from puppy breeding to breeding of farm animals, to breeding horses, you know. It blows my mind that these industries even exist, you know, to create other animals into existence for human profit, basically. I am.
So again, I would just make the simple argument that the gross, you're just going by the size of the torture chamber, okay? And the torture chamber nature has made is a million times bigger. So there's just, if you're going to have an agenda, that's the big virus. That's the one doing the real damage. Okay. He's fighting the common cold and saying, yes, it's a good fight. Well, it's an okay fight, but there's lot worse plagues, that need, white cell destruction.
And yes, opposed to that.
Yeah. And I do have a technical, philosophical point. You mentioned at the beginning of the talk, we're talking about negative obligations, not to infringe with animals when it comes to animal rights. With respect to wild animals, when animals are breeding in the wild, and then those animals will, you know, eat each other alive, or animals will die of disease and stuff.
Oh, they're smiling. Yes, it's a fun subject, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I laugh at some of this stuff too, but I mean, there's something just a little too weird.
I think, do we have any positive obligations to stop those animals from breeding to protect their offspring who will tend to go on to live unfortunately pretty bad lives?
Yeah, so my personal stance is, usually the way I say it in the talk is, these animals deserve negative rights to begin with, right? Mm. Because I also believe
Or whatever. I mean, even talking about a negative right just doesn't make much sense. So, why degrade your own rhetoric? It's one of the most foundational things you can even conceive as a word, the right not to be imposed, the right not to be trespassed against. They have a right, okay, not to be trespassed against by a crude, dumb, natural system.
We should get to positive rights. For example, if, like, I would like to start with negative rights and then end up with positive rights because of the fact, like, if I'm on the street and this has happened, I see a suffering dog, I believe that that dog has the right that I take them, or any other human takes them and sees what's happening to them and escape them and everything, if they have means, of course. And
what are they supposed to do? So you're going to impose surgery on dogs, or what's your solution except the humane and graceful exit? Everything deserves that as the minimum. The minimum is, if you're going to exterminate somebody, is to exterminate them without harming them. But that's the minimum. That's what they all should get, is no further imposition of harm.
Do I think that we should do the same with wild animals? Yes. The only reason I don't talk about wild animals specifically, to be very, very honest, is because I cannot even imagine what type of intervention we can even create to start targeting the case of wild animals.
So, again, what's the same thing you're targeting? You're targeting the procreation. That's the antinatalism part. So you just slowly but surely make it less and less practical for these animals to be able to procreate. So whether you do that, the hard way, or whether you do that the quick way, yes, you can torture them over a long period of time trying to reduce their numbers, or you can passively exterminate them, give them their graceful exit, and be rather harmless in completing the task. Nuke it from space, to quote Aliens, it's a bug planet. Gracefully exited.
And this is a topic that I discuss a lot with a few friends of mine who are educated, let's say, when it comes to wild animal suffering. Because
you have to be educated? Come on. I don't know. That seems a horrible reach. You have to be educated to know that wild animals suffer. So you can't really just, pet your cat or, talk to your dog. And you can't imagine that lots of the other wild animals could do exactly what your dog is doing or your cat is doing, and they would enjoy it very much to live a nice, comfortable, civilized life.
I always think, what could we even come up with? And where do you draw the line, right? Because some people even count like this. They say it's even more important.
Look, it's so simple, right? I mean, you do the human transition thing. So the antinatalists have already won if it wasn't for the dumbest people on Earth having way too many kids. So we've won 80%. If there's 10% of the population, we have to stop. That's it. And they're the only ones in the way, let's just say. That's the enemy. All of the negative effects on population are being created by that 10%. Not the 90%, the 10%. And once you've achieved this decline in human population, you just wait till it's low enough to a point where you just say this is the last generation. You grow old. You sit on a bench, you watch a few sunsets, and then you press the red button. Not that complicated. Not that horrible.
And then farmed animals, because their numbers are so much bigger. And that's because they're counting ants and worms and underground creatures.
So, you really are ignorant. Okay, the fact is, anything that can learn is doing reward and punishment. That's how they learn. They can't learn without some sort of system that rewards right answers and punishes wrong answers. So the first ouch goes way back. It's a very small brain capable of doing a very big ouch. That's a real realm of possibility truth. So I'm not saying you should not recognize that the more brain cells, the more complex the sensations might be. But it's kind of a bogus argument to say the sensations aren't there, because it works in terms of training things and motivating things. And all organisms aren't entirely programmed from birth. I don't think there's too many legged organisms, terrestrial organisms, where you could argue their behavior is so predictable, okay, that you could actually, predict it with a piece of software or something. They do have nuance, and they are conditioned. And especially, like I said, when you get into all the mammals, they're all learning through sensation. So all the rats and all the little squirrels and all the little creatures, okay, that we don't think much of, the fact is they're living very rich, sensual lives.
And that's where I kind of struggle to completely agree, because I feel like as much as it's about individual suffering, there's also in my opinion, a certain level of sentience that we should consider looking into, like how much a cow suffers in a dairy farm versus how much a worm suffers on the ground and how much I can do to stop the suffering.
So, right. So what's, you know, you don't have, you concede you don't have the education to have the conversation. But yeah, how, you know, the science isn't going to do you much better either, frankly, because they're a bunch of bigots who aren't very interested in it being a fact that creatures with very small primitive brains are doing a lot of feeling. It's not to their interest to say those words either.
Suffering of a cow versus how much I can do to stop the suffering of a worm on the ground.
So really, you didn't have to go to worms, did you? I mean, what do you think happens to a butterfly, you know, a caterpillar, when it goes into a chrysalis and its whole body is torn to pieces and moved around? Do you think nature cares whether that hurts or not? I mean, it's, you know, you think nature cares whether it hurts or not? Of course it doesn't.
So the discussion that I usually have with my friends is whether or not we could ever come up with a solution for wild animal suffering. Whereas for farm animals and animals that we're exploiting, we have the solution. It's there, right? We just have to implement it. So one of my friends said, well, we should concentrate on raising awareness about it so that if one day artificial intelligence helps us to find a solution, then people would agree.
Yeah, well, one thing solves the problem. I'm just saying, if you can get people to have enough empathy for animals, then they're going to have empathy for humans. So they're going to end up being anti-natalists going both ways. I mean, if you have empathy for humans, you can become empathetic towards animals and vice versa. So it's really just about having the capacity to recognize that you wouldn't want to torture something for your fun. If the price to go into Disneyland was you have to tear off or give some kid a cancer, you have to go over and inject the kid with cancer and then get your ticket to go into Disneyland. Well, all you're really trying to do is convince people that that's essentially the real circumstance here. That if you're procreating, you're basically imposing harm and death, just about guaranteed. Whether your kid will be harmed or killed, or whether your kid will end up harming things. One way or the other, there's going to be some harm made, okay? And it's all on you. It's because you said so. You said it had to happen. You said the kid has to have cancer because I have to have my fun. And that's pretty much the simplest description. If somebody can't understand that as an argument, then they're not in the mode to understand. They're just a religious fanatic, or they're some kind of fanatic, and they're just going to be belligerently stupid. Because it's just a fact. You're just opening the door that says torture on it, and then you're deciding to torture somebody else with it. You're using the weapon against other people. You're a horrible imposer.
I agreed with that, definitely.
Great.
So, no answer.
And as David Pierce was saying in the first talk, if we can't get people to care about, you know, the cow that's in their beef burger, I don't know how we're going to get them to care about the worm under the ground.
But why are you making those analogies? I mean, you don't have to say worm in the ground. You can say chimpanzee, or you could say baboon, or you could say monkey, or you can say lots of different organisms right now that, you know, right now there's, you know, those animals still get diseases that, you know, we don't get anymore, you know, and, you know, they fall out of trees paralyzed and just wait to get eaten by something. Terrible, horrible death happens every single millisecond in nature.
Yes.
Yeah, this one's so in front of your face, you know, it's a lot easier to grasp. And
I don't know. You really think so? I've met some cows, you know, frankly, and you really have to knock on them. You know, hello, knock, knock, anyone home? Moo. So I'm not saying, you know, don't get me wrong, cows have personality, especially when they're young, lots of personality. But just like with all herd animals, when they get a certain age, they have to turn their brain off and basically just graze all day, you know, to survive. And so they really just aren't doing much, you know, brain-wise. It's just kind of shut down, and the whole thing is just the stomach and putting food in the stomach and making that shit happen. They're basically asleep on their feet. You know, but I'm not saying you can't cause them pain and suffering. No. I'm just saying they're not a poster child for, I'm a super feeling organism. And I'd argue that if you take a very short video of a mouse, that's a lot of aliveness there. That's a lot of, what the fuck's going on? What the fuck? I mean, that's an organism that's alive.
The topic of wild animal suffering, actually. There's just a question from the audience about whether or not it would be immoral for humans to go extinct and allow wild animals to inherit the earth.
Whether it be immoral for the bus driver to jump out of the fucking bus, or the plane pilot to jump out of the fucking plane. Would that be immoral? Yes, it would be. It would be totally unethical. We're the only thing that can fly this thing. We're the only, the intelligence has to take responsibility. You can't pretend you're not responsible. Fuck. You're all they've got. You're it. Okay? I don't care whether you don't want to wear your Superman suit. It's too bad. You're the bus driver. Put the fucking suit on. Damn.
Given that there is a lot of wild animal suffering out there.
I like these questions. That's a good one. Is it immoral for you?
All this smiling does get on my nerves.
Humans to extinct, given the fact that it will leave behind a lot of wild animal suffering. So that the question, I think it's a difficult question because it kind of already carries the like creates a fact that if we were not to go extinct, we would definitely find a solution to wild animal suffering. So
Well, what the fuck? If we didn't go extinct, we'd find a solution to wild animal suffering? What's the solution going to be? We can't find a solution for us. Are we going to put them in a virtual reality? I mean, what's the solution? How are you going to engineer this perfect experiential life? Again, you can't even do it in a virtual reality, because in a virtual reality, you still have to be hungry and thirsty. You still have to have the deprivation that comes before the satisfaction. And how much of that are you going to impose? I mean, what a ridiculous invasion.
It's creating the idea that we would find, right? Whereas yeah. I'm very skeptical of whether or not we would. And so then my personal answer there would be...
All right, so he's conceding that we wouldn't find that solution. So again, how can you leave them behind? You can't. You can't give them some other prescription than the prescription you gave for your own kind, which is non-existence. You have to create that non-existence. And yeah, you're going to have to do something you don't want to do. But you're going to have to take the lesser of the evils. You're going to have to find the least evil choice. And in my opinion, the least evil choice is nuke it from space.
Well, when do wild animals suffer more? With us on the planet or not on the planet?
I think it's almost ridiculous to ask the question, because as much as we have, you know, consolidated a bunch of suffering into our little torture chambers, we've also cemented and asphalted over a ton of the biosphere. We've cut down all that rainforest shit with a huge number of organisms per square foot being fed by those kind of biosystems. We've definitely, you know, how much sentient life have we extracted out of the ocean, even in terms of destroying that, the viability of that biosphere. So, come on. Not much of an argument here. We've clearly probably prevented more living organisms than we're creating.
I would think we create more wild animal suffering by existing on this planet. Not wild animal suffering, but overall animal suffering by existing on this planet than by not existing on this planet. Because if we're not on the planet, then there are tens of billions of animals that are not being, well, basically.
So again, the guy says he's never heard of the million numbered herds of bison that went migrating across the North America. You know, I mean, yeah, come on. Too silly. It really is just too silly an argument.
Into existence. So we're taking all of that away, which, at least when it comes to mammalian animals.
I mean, yeah, well, you can get into birds and stuff. I mean, you probably dramatically reduce the number of birds flying around.
It's a I think wild animals, someone can correct me, I believe they're less than 5% or 10% of animal population.
Where do you get that? Wild animals are less than 5% of the population? Where can you come up with a number like that? The density, the rodents alone. Rodents outnumber everything. Everything other, anything human and pets and all, you know, you could add up all that stuff and you're still not going to, there's still more mice per human.
Oh, maybe even 4% is the number I remember, but anyone can correct me in the comments, of course.
Yes, please, somebody do that.
I do think that there will be less overall suffering without humans existing because of the fact that we wouldn't be breeding all these animals into existence, which... put the numbers together are much higher than the number of wild animals.
Interesting. Well,
I just don't know how he imagines that's possible. I mean, when you look at the nature films and stuff and just see the density of the populations and know how many of those populations we have eradicated, just no way.
Just on the topic of wild animal suffering, we do have our talk with Oscar Horta. Oh, quickly.
Oh, nice. That.
But one of the big causes of extinction in wild animals at the moment is, of course, animal agriculture.
Yes.
And yes. I do use that as a counterexample to people who say that humans are having a positive impact on the world by reducing the amount of wild animal suffering. But if they're replacing rainforests with factory farms and, intensive.
Well, again, so you're still making an argument that I don't think you can defend, that somehow the factory farm is more productive than the rainforest in terms of creating or sustaining biological life, and I don't think there's a chance that's correct. It's all a thermal thing, you know, the one system has a huge thermodynamic storage potential, the other system is leaking thermodynamically. So it can't possibly sustain as much animated life. All right, anyway, so probably enough of a video for this time. So I will probably do the rest of these little things and clips as I view them. Sorry, I really didn't pay this guy any fair respect because I didn't watch his whole interview, so that's my bad. I just didn't find most of these arguments to be very productive in terms of recognizing that the only obligation here is to explain a little tiny bit about imposition, trespass, harm, and cruelty. And you're basically just saying to people, look, this is the definition of an asshole, okay? I mean, somebody who tortures something for their own benefit. You know, somebody who, goes to a loan shark and has the loan shark cut somebody else's hand off and give them the money. And that's all procreation is. It's, please, I have a selfish desire to do this silly thing for whatever silly reasons because I get off on it because I'm that kind of pervert. And I like playing with little kids and, fucking with their destiny. I don't care. Is what they have to say if I harm them catastrophically. And that requires a certain amount of cruel ignorance that's just too obvious. And if that's what the person is going to admit they are, if that's the piece of paper they're going to sign, I'm a cruel, ignorant fuck, then fine. But until then, until you force them to own up to what they're doing, there's no real point in having a conversation because they have to recognize that, yes, all they're doing is defending cruelty. They're defending opening a door that says torture on it. And they're saying, I'm going to open it. I'm going to give kids cancer to have what I want. I'm going to force other people to suffer for me. They're slave owners. It's no different. You're just a slave owner if you're pro-life. You're just saying you want living things to serve you, your interest, your fantasies, your notions of accomplishment and victory. They have to be a slave to it. They have to die over and over and over and over again in horrible, horrible, awful ways to serve your fantasy. You pathetic cunt. That's what you need to say. All right. So, till the next time and such. Yeah. This has been a DoNotGuide.com video presentation. Until the next time. Ephelist.com. I'm going to have to work on that website, really. There was some guy who was supposed to give me the website stuff, supposed to be doing a whole bunch of it, but blah, blah, 2 years later, nothing. I mean, just an irritating. But whatever. Okay, so till the next time and such.